the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
Well, Congress just passed a $1.9 trillion stimulus following the $900 billion stimulus in December, but there's more work to be done, according to Democrats in Washington. They're working on the Green New Deal. How are they going to pay for it? Well, that's the subject of today's show as we talk about the Biden tax proposals. Joining me from Putnam Investments is Chris Hennessy. Chris, why don't you give us a rundown as we talk about this and the possibility that this actually gets pushed through? Republicans are opposed to this because this is probably going to be the largest tax increase since Bill Clinton. And what are the possibilities this goes through?
Well, Jim, the possibilities are pretty high in the sense that the Democrats will do this through reconciliation, meaning that this legislation has to have an impact either on revenue, spending, or the deficit after 10 years. And thus, they won't need one Republican vote. It is close, though, because you've got the House is pretty narrow. I mean, the House is 219 Democrats, 211 Republicans. There are five vacancies in the House. 218 is majority. And assuming it goes from the House to the Senate, it's going to take every single Democratic senator, that's 50 senators, to vote yes. If one defects, then you need a Republican crossover. So I think they can, in fact, get this done. Now, we can talk a little bit about there are some more moderate Democratic senators. Joe Manchin from West Virginia is going to object to this next round of infrastructure if there's anything that would impact West Virginia energy, right? And you've got John Tester from Montana, Kelly and Sinema from Arizona. Those are the more moderate senators. But I think this will go through. And here's the issue, Jim. The issue is it $2 trillion, $3 trillion, or $4 trillion, and at least I think two-thirds of it has to be paid for with tax revenue increases. And then a third is put on the government's credit card. So they got to figure out. They're not going to get any Republican support for this.
All right. Well, why don't we talk about major legislation that was put forth in 2020? Let's go with that, and then we'll go directly to the Biden proposals. Because personally, just my own view, I think it's going to put us in a depression. But let's go with 2020. Talk about the Secure Act and the CARES Act. What changed?
Sure. So Secure Act hit in January of 2020, and before COVID. And the big changes, which were, I think, positive, it pushed the required minimum distribution age from 70 and a half to age 72, did a lot for retirement plans. The negative there was that what we call in the business stretch IRA, which is nothing more than meaning if I leave an IRA account to a non-spouse beneficiary, they can stretch distributions out over their life. That's now gone and been replaced with a 10-year rule. I got to clean out the account within 10 years of death. So that was Secure Act. Then we went to COVID, and I think it was late March, we got the COVID relief was passed, and that involved a lot of different things. But the major thing I think a lot of us, this so-called CARES Act, were focused on was the PPP, Payroll Protection Program. So these business owners that had to shut down could get loans, and they're really grants, and eventually get forgiven. Then we go all the way out to, December? And you mentioned it, and we got another piece of legislation, and 5,500 pages. I think that's one of the largest pieces of legislation I've ever seen. And part of that was helicopter money. And then there was more helicopter money, as we know, in this most recent act. So that's kind of what's happened over last year, feeding into this year, Jim.
All right, let's talk about the stimulus that's come through, because it's, you know, we call MOAB the mother of all basically stimulus programs. We had, $3 trillion last year? We're already up for $3 trillion this year when you consider the $900 billion passed in December. And it's my understanding, at least from what I'm reading in the Wall Street Journal, they're not going to end there. In other words, when a lot of these transfer payments end September 6th, they're going to extend them.
Yeah, so they pushed out. They wanted to get, the Democrats did this, done by March because the unemployment was going to run out. The federal unemployment supplement was going to run out. So now they've extended that, as you just said, to September. And I think you could well see that extended again. And you could possibly see another. Well, what they're going to do is they're going to have a so-called infrastructure bill. And that could include a lot of things. It's not only the internet and roads and bridges, but it's other things. It's green initiative regarding energy and other things will be in that legislation. And that's got to be paid for in some way, because if they do it through reconciliation, they have to connect that back to the budget, which is why, Jim, they couldn't get the $15 minimum wage through. They couldn't connect that to the budget. So they dropped that in this bill that went through, this relief act that went through. So, yeah, we're looking at a lot of money. And I think now the number is $120 billion a month is being so-called printed, if you will. So do the math there, right? 120 times 12.
Yeah, I guess a question I would raise, because modern monetary theory seems to be the philosophy of both parties. If the government can issue debt and the Fed simply print it, why raise taxes at all? Why not just print your way through this, I guess, is a question.
Just before I dialed in for this interview with you, I was reading something about that and saying, well, why give people $1,400 stimulus check? Why not give them $20,000 stimulus check, right? Which is exactly your point. Well, in my view, what eventually happens is that you're going to flood the system with money. Let's call it M2. And there's the fear of inflation. And, you know, another thing, Jim, a lot of these people that got that $1,400, I'm not so sure they need it. You could make up to $150,000 married and still get a $1,400 check. In fact, a family of four would get $5,600. And that could be somebody that never lost their job. So the system is being flooded with money. And where's it all going? It's going into the markets, risk on, because the interest rates came out today, right, are going to be kept low because the government cannot afford to pay the interest on the debt. I mean, we've seen the 10-year, what it got to, 1.67, I think, Jim?
We're at $7.6 trillion, and at this rate, we're going to be close to $10 trillion. I mean, why raise taxes when you can give money free, according to MMT? Well, Chris, let's move forward with some of the policy trends. You've got a slide deck that we'd like to make available. Let's talk about policy trends to watch for this year.
I think some of the things to watch for this year, I mean, maybe additional COVID relief. I mentioned infrastructure, green, education, healthcare spending. And there could be, interestingly, there is some, I think there'll be bipartisan support for Secure Act 2.0. So here's the reason for that. You've got the chairman of that committee is from Massachusetts, House Ways and Means, and Kevin Brady from Texas is the minority chair. So they work very well together, and Secure Act 2 will involve increasing, well, the RMD would be pushed out from age 72 to age 75. Then in addition to that, right now to use the qualified travel deduction, which means taking money out of an IRA direct to a charity, so it's not income to you, be kept at $100,000. They're going to move that to $130,000, but they're going to open that up for retirement accounts also, not just IRAs. So I think that's going to happen. I think that'll go through on a bipartisan basis. Then they got to address the debt ceiling. And I think that's been that's in July. That's already happened 99 times in the past. So that's no big deal. They'll address the debt ceiling, right? So those are some of the things. I think the biggest thing, though, Jim, in 2021 is the infrastructure provision and what's going to happen with tax increases. And what I get, and I'm sure you do too, from clients, two questions. One, what are they going to go after? And two, will it be retroactive to January 1st of 2021?
You've got a lot of information I want to come back to, but let's talk about the tax changes that the Biden administration is talking about, because this is going to have a significant impact not only on the markets, estate planning, income tax planning, and might I say migration.
Yes, that's very true too. So I think the first four, this is getting some press, got some press over the weekend, and the first four that are going to pop up in this infrastructure bill, raising the corporate rate from the current corporate rate, 21% to 28%. Biden talked about that in the campaign. Now, maybe it's 26 or 27, but what does that do? Well, it affects the after-tax earnings of corporations, right? They go down. And if you use a PE multiple, then the stock price should go down. So that's the first one. The second one is he's mentioned, President Biden has mentioned, restore a top rate of 39.6% at higher income levels, which is $400,000 or more. Now, I don't know, Jim. I'm sure you've looked at this too. So I've got a tax rate chart in front of me, and I'm looking at this tax rate chart. And this is not based on total income. It's based on net taxable income. But you can go up today to $418,850 and stay in a 32% bracket. So how are they actually going to do this? I don't know. It's not clear, and it hasn't been announced.
And Chris, can I stop you there for a minute? Because the $400,000, which kicks in on a lot of these new tax increases, is that for anybody, or is it different for individuals versus couples?
No, it would be no differentiation that I've heard of for individuals versus couples at all. So it's for anyone. Whereas normally you would see half that number for a single person, but no differentiation. And that's an interesting point because it's a small item, but anybody that got unemployment benefits in 2020, they put into this relief act, okay, the first $10,200, you don't have to pay taxes on. But there's a cliff on that one. You go over, what's the number? I think it's $150,000. You go to 150, it's all taxable income to you. And there's no distinction between married and single. It's still $10,400.
Now, let's talk about another market-killing provision, which would be taxing investment income on capital gains and dividends as ordinary income, or basically that 40% tax rate.
Right. So if you look at a tax rate chart today, most people of paying a 15% qualified dividend capital gains rate. And that would be income, now I'm going to do married, that'd be income of $80,800 to $501,600. So most people are in that range, 15% qualified dividend capital gains rate. If you had over $1 million of income, including any capital gains, that rate goes to 39.6% plus a 3.8% Medicare share tax, you're at 43.4%. Now that would be the largest, I think this is a correct statement, the largest capital gains rate in the history of the United States, if that were to happen. So that's brutal on investments. And of course, people would plan accordingly, right? I mean, if this goes into effect, let's say January 1 of 2022, and you got big unrealized gains, you'd think seriously about taking them in 2021 or other strategies. There are travel strategies you can employ. There's strategies to try to smooth out income. And all sorts of things.
What about payroll taxes on anybody making over 400? Because this is how you get up to your 70% tax rate, which we'll cover in a second here.
Right. Well, I don't think that's going to happen. I'll tell you why. Interestingly, in the rules of the Senate, you cannot change Social Security payroll taxes under reconciliation. In other words, that part of it is subject to the 60-vote rule. So I don't think the Democrats can change the Social Security payroll tax without Republican votes, and that's not going to happen. So I'm not as worried about that one, but if it happened, to your point, it would be brutal because it would say, okay, right now you're paying a Social Security tax up to whatever it is, $136,000, whatever it is. Then there's a donut hole to up to $400,000. Then it would kick in again to an unlimited amount. So that would be absolutely brutal if that were to occur. It's actually up to 137,500 or 700.
Okay, and then talk about they're going to restore itemized deductions, except for if you make a certain limit, they would limit it at 28% and then put in the Pease Amendment, which would phase out even some of that.
So presumably they'd use the same number. In other words, if your income was $400,000 or more, then the benefit of itemized deductions is limited to 28%. So think about someone, we'll say under the Biden new tax rates at 39.6%, and they have a $10,000 deduction. Well, under the old law, if they're in a 39.6% bracket, they save $3,960. Under this provision, they'd only save $2,800. And then the Pease limitation is basically another kicker. If you go back to the last time we had it, was 2017. It's a phase out of the benefit of itemized deductions based on your income. And you lose 3 cents on the dollar of itemized deductions up to a maximum of 80%. Well, back then, if your income was over $313,000, that number would probably be higher than that. So now that one I don't put as high on the list, but I'll tell you something, Jim. This is what's interesting. The way they go about this is, let's just play the numbers game. Let's assume this whole thing is a $3 trillion piece of legislation. So they back into what they need to raise for revenue. They back into it. And they say, okay, well, we need to raise two trillion in revenue. So then they start to go through the list. That's the way they're going to do it. They're going to back into it. It could be the infrastructure bill is less than that. It could be it's $4 trillion.
And could they not, Chris, instead of 400,000, drop that to 250?
Yes, they could. And there's another thing they could do, which is interesting. It's insidious, but it's interesting. They could start to fool around with the threshold dollar amounts. So I'll just give you an example. You know, you can stay in a 24% marginal rate between 172,000 and 329,000 taxable income. But what if that spread gets narrower? Right? They could start to do that too. That's another way that they could raise some revenue. Now, you know, another one that you and I have talked about that's interesting is the SALT limitation of 10,000. I know where you are, you know, in California, a lot of people listening from California, that's brutal.
Yeah, $10,000 is the property taxes on a garage.
So the bad news, in my humble opinion, is I don't think that's going to change. And I'll tell you why. It's a political nightmare. The data indicates if you remove that limitation of 10,000, that something like 56% of the benefit goes to the top 1%. So that's a political nightmare for the Democrats to defend. Now, what they could do, maybe, is take the 10 and double it to 20. So now you have two garages, right? So maybe.
Yeah. Maybe do a second story on your garage. They're also talking about taxing the hell out of somebody when they pass away. They're talking about reducing the exemption down to what, 3.5, then raising the tax rate to 45, but then also taxing you again by getting rid of the stepped up basis. So Chris, theoretically, you could have 45% tax rates on estate taxes and 43% tax rates on capital gains. I mean, they could essentially almost confiscate 80% of a person's estate.
Right. And it looks like they will tinker with the estate tax. I think the first thing they'll tinker with is moving the 40% rate to 45%. I think the second thing will be the exemption. You know, bring the exemption down. The step up is interesting. I mean, there's two ways you can do that. You can do the Canadian system, which is horrible. Because in the Canadian system, if I die and I leave a piece of property worth $500,000 to my son, cost basis 50, he has to pay the $450,000 gains tax, even if he doesn't sell the property. So, and then we should probably mention that you got a couple other problems out there. Ron Wyden from Oregon, who happens to be chair of Senate Finance, pretty powerful guy, is talking about a mark-to-market tax, so-called wealth tax. And Elizabeth Warren from my state of Massachusetts is also talking about a wealth tax if you had over 50 million. Now, I don't think either one of those has a chance, but they both put pressure on the Democrats to raise taxes for the so-called wealthy.
And, you know, I just they keep bringing up the wealth tax, and the way it's proposed would be a 2% on anything worth 50 million,
right?
3% on anything over a billion, and then they talked about these billionaires that have most of their wealth in the companies they own, like a Jeff Bezos, Warren Buffett. And they said, well, that's not a problem. They can just tender their 3% in shares to the Treasury. Can you see Jeff Bezos giving away 30% of his stock to the Treasury? I don't.
No, I don't see that either. No. And it's very hard to administer that type of tax. It's hard to administer a mark-to-market tax that Ron Wyden is talking about. And probably, Jim, both of those are going to have to pass constitutional muster. That's what I would think. And that's why they don't want to approach them, because they'd get tied up in the courts as we got closer to the election, the midterm elections.
You know, this is, it seems like a trend here, and you probably know more about this, Chris. It's my understanding, whenever they've raised taxes, if you look back historically, the government has taken in anywhere from 17 to 19% of GDP in tax revenue.
GDP, right.
Yeah. So it doesn't matter. You could raise the tax rates to 90%. You're not going to get any more tax revenues because people's behavior changes. And
absolutely.
And capital is mobile. You know, if you're in a high tax state like California, if you can't control federal, well, then move to Florida, Texas, or Nevada.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And there's a lot of evidence on the capital gains rate issue. The elasticity of raising the capital gains rate, it just doesn't work. It just, at some level, it just doesn't raise the revenue that's projected because people plan, right? So they plan to stay, let's say, under $1 million, or they shift investments. Maybe they don't have as much in growth assets. Maybe they're in municipal bonds. if the rates went up, right? And down the road, I think, you know, I still think we're looking at inflation two, 3 years from now. The economy can't absorb all this.
No, and the other thing, too, remember when President Clinton raised tax rates, capital gains rates to 28%? We got that market hiccup in 94. Next thing they know, they dropped it back down to 20 again. And the other thing, Chris, do they really want to antagonize their revenue base? I mean, who, you know, the billionaires on Wall Street that support the Democratic Party, the people in Hollywood, are they going to really want to antagonize those people or the tech oligarchs?
Yeah, and they just read an article. I think it was Bloomberg, but I just read an article on the law. The tax increases like this, Jim, the Democrats will begin to lose voting support. And thus, to go back to your earlier comment, that's why they want to get HR 1 done. They want to get that in, right? So this will be a problem for them, but of course they'll frame it in a way that, oh, you know, anyone under 400,000 is fine. We're really raising taxes on the wealthy. We're not impacting the middle class, but they are impacting the middle class. Look at someone's 401k plan. They raise the corporate rates, and if the market comes down, right? That's an impact on the middle class.
And if you raise these tax rates, let's just assume, you know, let's get rid of the Social Security tax increase. So you've got a 40, let's round it off to 44% when you add the tax on top of the 39.6. So let's say it's 44. In California, add 13. So you're at 57%. I mean, at 60%. What's a small business owner going to do when 60% of their income goes in the form of taxes?
Yeah, and they can't raise the price of their goods and services to absorb that. And a lot of them will find something else. I mean, I think, and you know, what is it? 90% of our economy is small business owners.
What's the chance, Chris? I know Obama wanted to raise taxes, but his advisors were saying we were just coming out of a deep recession. The financial crisis, and they go, wait till the economy is on its feet, and he didn't raise taxes to his second term. What are the chances if we start to weaken? I was talking to a banker yesterday, and they're expecting lower interest rates as we head towards the end of the year. So if the economy rolls over, because the stimulus was really transfer payments, once you spend it, it's gone. What's the chances that maybe cooler heads talk to a Biden and say, look, the economy is too weak to absorb this right now. You're going to kill it.
Well, you know, two thoughts. One, Larry Summers, former Secretary of Treasury, you know, he came out, he's a Democrat. He came out and said, this relief act was not needed. We need to put shots in people's arms. That's the first thing. But the second thing is, I don't think the Democrats will make these tax increases retroactive because the economy needs to recover. Now, will they, to your question related to me, Jim, will they roll over a little bit? I don't know, because you've got this very liberal segment of the Democrats who are pushing these initiatives with Biden, and I'm not sure he's going to back off. I mean, I was just reading something that was arguing he is now more liberal than Obama was. So I think he's going to push forward. And I also begin to wonder, is he really going to last 4 years until re-election?
This is just mine, but if you just take a look at his cognitive abilities, I don't think he serves out his first year in office. I mean, because it's my understanding he's had medical issues, and obviously he's struggling cognitively if he makes it. Think of the strains of the presidency put on somebody that's frail.
Yeah, exactly right. And, you know, I think with clients, Jim, they have to start to think about all this and okay, they have to think about tax-free accounts like a Roth IRA. They have to think about, to your point, where do they live? And I'm thinking about that myself. What state do they live in? How are they going to minimize the impact of all this as we go down the road in time?
And even then, Chris, what happens if conservative people all move to red states? The red states get more senators and they have more power legislatively. I've never seen anything like, you know, being in the planning industry the last two decades. It seems like every president that comes in changes the tax laws. Every president that comes in, only his party votes for their bill. I mean, only Republicans voted for Trump. Only Democrats voted for Obama. It's like every single administration, it's a political football.
Yeah, exactly right. And they all want to get reelected. And I think as we get on the road in time, it could well be. What fascinates me is this nuclear option in the Senate, because to get HR1 done, to make, let's say, Puerto Rico and Washington, D.C. states, they have to go to the nuclear option, which many senators argue would forever change the U.S. Senate, because you wouldn't have debate. And even Manchin makes the point. He says, look, I wouldn't vote for the nuclear option because I always want to hear the other side. I want to hear the minority side in debate.
That would just simply go away. And basically, you would turn this into a one-party system. And what would happen if states like Texas just say, you know what, we're seceding from the country? I'm hearing more talk. California, we're talking about a Southern California seceding from California. What happens politically if you start seeing something like that as a result?
Right, Nick, that all could be down the road in time if we move in this direction. Because it's so, I think it's so partisan now. I mentioned earlier the SECURE Act will have SECURE Act 2.0 will have bipartisan support, but that's a rare example of that.
Yeah, because the trend, if you look at politically, is every presidency and their party vote for their legislation. There's no cooperation with the other side, whether it was Trump or whether it's Obama or now Biden. So, Chris, I'd like to have you back again and talk about strategies, but I guess we're going to find out what's going to be on the agenda next month when they plan on introducing this. But I want to thank you. And is it okay to put this slide deck for our listeners? Because it's scary as hell.
Yeah, that's fine, Jim. Yep.
All right, we'll do that. Chris, as always, it's a pleasure. I hope you enjoy Florida. I may be joining you.
Okay, thanks, Jim. Thanks for joining.
Okay, bye-bye. Well, that concludes my interview with tax expert Chris Hennessy. And once again, we're going to put this slide deck up on, because a lot of this stuff you're not going to hear coming from the media. So you can look at it yourself and come up with your own conclusions, how safe you feel about what's coming ahead of us. I'm Jim Poplava. Thanks for listening.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.